That's right. Just 51 minutes left until I hand it off to the fans and the pro with Deuce and the Moose coming up next on WWL. I want to make sure you know this. We got tickets for you to go see the Saints play Tampa Bay and to see the Saints play the Denver Broncos on Thursday Night Football. You want to be in that number? That sound good to you? I bet it does. Right now, today, I want you to enter to win WWL's Double Saints Game Day Giveaway. How do you do it? It's very simple. You go to WWL.com/contests for your chance to win tickets to the Tampa Bay game and the Broncos game. That's from Dudley DeBosier, the official injury lawyers of the Saints and WWL. What do you get in return for entering this contest and maybe winning these tickets? You get a pair of premium game tickets to both games, plus you get VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. Now, you hear us talk about this Bullseye Event Group thing all the time. Let me tell you, this is a great event. Why? Two words. Open bar. Open bar. And it's not like one of those weird, sad open bars where you go and you get like, no-name gin or like, Aristocrat vodka or something. No, this is the premium stuff, dude. I'm talking Myers. I'm talking Grey Goose. I'm talking, Johnny Walker. This is premium liquor and all you can eat. There's an all you can eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May. All of this is taking place, I think, five stories up, overlooking Champion Square. So use your imagination right now. You got two tickets, so you bring a friend. You got a free cup of premium liquor in one hand. You got something delicious in the other hand, maybe like prime rib. I don't know. They always got different stuff up there for the food option. And you're looking down over Champion Square at an ocean of hoodats all milling around there like little ants. And you're up on the fifth floor balcony. There's a live DJ. You got an open bar. You got an all-you-can-eat buffet. Are you kidding me? Why would you not enter that contest? Why would you not want to do that? Go to WWL.com/contests today for your chance to win those tickets. That's WWL's Double Saints Game Day giveaway. I've been asking today about books that made an impression on you as a young person. I thank everyone for sending in these texts. I'm going to start reading them now. Here's a text that says, "Hey, Ian, as for juvenile books, I highly recommend The Warrior." This is a very large, it's the Warrior series by Aaron Hunter. It's a very large series of books. It's about cat clans in the wild. Okay, you had my curiosity, now I have my attention. I found the first one, Into the Wild, at the St. Francis Animal Sanctuary thrift store as an adult. I've thoroughly enjoyed reading them. They are recommended for sixth grade and up, but I think you and any adult cat lover would enjoy them. I sure have. Most are available free as a PDF online and at the library. Enjoying your hosting this week, as I always do. Thank you. No, thank you. I have heard of the Warrior series. I've never seen one, and I've never read one. But, next time I'm out at the St. Francis Animal Sanctuary thrift store, I'll see if they still got a copy around there. Here's a text from Doug in Hammond. Doug says a book that made an impression on him as a young man was The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman by Ernest J. Gaines. Curbed my views on racism and bigotry, which made me realize that it's still an illness that plagues this country. Good, Doug. That's damn fine work. I think Ernest Gaines is also the fellow who wrote, A Time for Dying, A Lesson Before Dying. I think that's it. I could be wrong about that. Somebody correct me. But yeah, Ernest Gaines is great. Glad it curbed your views on racism at an early age. That's important. Somebody says Animal Farm. Absolutely. I read Animal Farm in my early high school years. I remember it well. Many people texted it and said To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a great book. I think I was maybe in middle school. I think that was one of the books that we read kind of as a group, where the teacher's like reading out loud and we're all kind of following along. Somebody else says, they said also To Kill a Mockingbird all day, but some people are banning it. LOL. Yeah, that's too bad. I don't know why people are out here trying to ban To Kill a Mockingbird. I wonder if anybody ever read, the other Harper Lee book, Go Tell a Watchman. I keep meaning to get a hold of that, but I haven't yet. Here's a text that says, how about The Little Red Hen? It has all the moral, ethical, and economic fairness principles that anyone needs to know. I love it. Great, 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 great. Soothsayer Sam had a text here. Uh-oh, where did it go? Ah, he says, I remember Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book and Big Game Animals of North America by Jack O'Connor. Both had an impact. I remember The Jungle Book well. It's funny you mentioned The Jungle Book. I'm actually right now finally getting around to reading The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, which I had never read before, and it's a book that literally changed the world. It changed the way that we... Well, look, I'm about, you know, a third of the way into it, so I don't want to say what everything it changed. But from what I know about The Jungle, the meatpacking industry was never the same after that book came out in 1906. I'll just leave it at that. A couple texts of a more political nature here. I was talking to, Robert on the North Shore last hour. He was talking about how presidents should enforce the law, not try to change it. Sal texted in and said, I wonder how he feels about a president that flat out breaks the law. Interesting question, Sal. Also, here's a text that says Donald Trump signed 220 executive orders while Biden only signed 142. Make of that what you will. Here's a text that says Trump is so steadfast in what he believes in that J.D. Vance claimed Trump saved Obamacare, the program he promised to repeal and replace. This was maybe the most insane moment of the vice presidential debate. Was J.D. Vance gaslighting his eyeballs out, telling us that Donald Trump saved Obamacare? Like, who was your audience for that lie, J.D.? There's a lot of gullible people in this country, but... boy, you really think your voters are incredibly stupid if you think they're going to buy that. There is no universe in which anyone can make a convincing argument that Donald Trump salvaged Obamacare. Republicans in Congress, depending on how you count it, voted between 70 and 100 times to repeal Obamacare. Trump most famously got involved back in 2017. He had this repeal effort that was defeated at the last minute by John McCain, right? Remember that John McCain comes out and he gives the thumbs down. Boom. No repeal. That proposal would have eliminated the individual and the employer mandate and other provisions, really done away with Obamacare as we know it. Donald Trump tweeted after that, 3 Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down. As I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode and then deal. Watch. Again, Donald Trump said after John McCain gave the thumbs down, let Obamacare implode and then deal. Watch. I don't know why J.D. Vance is out here trying to convince us that Donald Trump wanted to do anything with Obamacare besides repeal it. Really, really silly stuff there. Got into a conversation about student loan forgiveness. Here's a text that says, my counter argument in regards to your claim about people getting their student loans paid off would be, what about those of us that worked hard enough to put our kids through college, sacrificed to put our kids through college, and are receiving nothing in return? I would love to have the $200,000 returned back to me to buy a better house, to have a new car. How do you respond to that? Please respond on air, as I am very interested in your reply. I'll say this. When I've seen this question asked before, people say, like, I already cured myself of cancer, so why are you going to spend money trying to cure somebody else's cancer? I understand why it might feel frustrating for those who already paid off their loans, but student loan forgiveness, it's not about being unfair to those who have worked hard. It's about addressing a larger problem that's affecting the whole economy. Not every federal benefit is for every person who's paying taxes. If you already bought a house with all your own money, are you then upset that there's people out here who are getting a tax credit for a first-time home buyer? I would think not. By helping people get out from under this crushing debt, again, that means they have more money to spend in their communities, to buy houses, start families, contribute more to society. It's not a handout. It's an investment that can benefit everyone, even those who've already paid off their loans. if you're struggling to figure out how to make sense of the argument in favor of student loan forgiveness, put your own individual story aside for just a second. I'm not saying it's not important and that your feelings aren't real and valid, but just put that individualism aside for just a second and think about the entire society that we live in and the benefit that would come to everybody if your friends and neighbors and coworkers and family members and children, the people next to you at church, there's a benefit to everybody if they're not walking around with tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt that they will never pay off. Let's tuck in a phone call here. Julie in Metairie is on the Open Heart Jewelers Talking text line. Good afternoon, Julie. How are you today?
Okay. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing well. Thanks, man. I'm doing real well. Thank you.
Okay. I was just wanting to make a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm very, very upset, and really, I think it's a disgrace.
Uh-oh.
That we had, we have 1.4 million illegals that are in Manhattan, and they're living in luxury hotels, 300 a day. Plus, they were issued, each person, a $10,000 debit card. And we have our own citizens who were born, raised in our country, and are in devastation right now from this hurricane. And Vice President Kamala stands up and says, we're going to issue $750. I think that's absurd. Yes, they used all the money on these illegals, and now they don't have any. And I know they have different little sections, but you can look at it like buckets. It's taxpayers' money that went in these buckets, and if one bucket's empty, then you use the other bucket. But they're all empty because of who they left in. And I know you made a little comment. You said something about to the last caller. You don't think the borders are open. Well, what do you need to see to say the borders are open?
I just, it's a matter of defining what an open border is, Julie. Like, what do you imagine an open border looks like? Do you imagine that that just means that people are running across the border and they never interact with law enforcement at all?
Well, yeah, I saw that. I saw them tear down the fence and run across. And I also know that when Trump was in office, 11 people on the terrorist list came in. Mm-hmm. And this administration, it's over 350. And nobody knows where they're at. I'd call that an open border. I mean, I saw it. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were running in.
No, yeah, look, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. But, a lot of the people that are in the country that people weren't that they wish were not here are not people that just ran through the fence. You know, they're people that applied for asylum status or they're working their way through the system in some other lane. You know, it's just because they're here doesn't mean they ran over the fence.
Well, yes, yeah, some of them
or that we don't know or that law enforcement doesn't know who they are and where they are.
Right. And the ones that are really scary are the ones that don't do it like that, that are just coming across, sneaking across. And that's the criminals, the murderers, the ones that's already murdered many of our people who were either jogging in a park or that poor little girl that was 13 years old that got raped. I mean, there's many of them. And ones driving around illegally killing people. Yeah, I know we have people that live here that do that. We can't do anything about that. They live here. They were born here.
Yeah.
But we certainly can do things about these people coming in when they shouldn't be here. And I just think it's a shame that now we have all these people that we have to pay for with our tax money, and our own citizens who lost everything in floodwaters are getting $750.
Yeah, I mean, that's not passing the smell test for me, Julie. I don't know where you got that. I did see a headline this morning that Fox News had let me just get this out, ma'am, had unfairly cut off that comment, and they selectively edited that to specifically make it seem like those people were only going to get $750. That's uncanny. Like, that's not believable to me. To hear you say that to me, it sounds like that can't possibly be true.
No, it is, because I saw Kamala say it on the podium on CNN. When she said that she's giving them $750.
Okay, I'll have to go back and take a look at it, but it doesn't pass the smell test. Well, okay, let's talk about that $10,000 debit card. That's news to me as well. That also sounds like that kind of strains belief. Where did you hear that, Julie?
I heard that on CNN.
You heard that immigrants in New York City were getting $10,000 debit cards?
Debit cards, yeah. This was like maybe 3 or 4 months ago. Oh, yeah, they were all getting that.
Okay.
Each person.
I remember from back in February, there was a New York City pilot program that it wasn't federal dollars. This is New York City. They gave out debit cards that had $12 per person per day, and they're only allowed to spend it on food and baby food at certain retailers. I don't think there's a $10,000 debit card floating around out there for any person
who
just shows up.
I can try to email where that was stated, but it certainly was.
I just
think it's terrible for the poor people that need help. And I just one more thing.
Sure.
You know, I saw Obama when Bush flew over, when Katrina hit, which was terrible. Bush flew over on the plane.
Yeah, who could forget
3 days after. Yeah. And Obama just trashed him for it. I mean, just, I saw that last night. What he was stated, that it was terrible and this is insane and, on a plane looking through a window. Well, I don't see Obama saying anything about Biden 5 days later doing the exact same thing. You see, that's how things get, people start with these different parties. I mean,
Why didn't he
say anything about Biden? Why didn't he make a statement?
Because the situations aren't the same, Julie. What's happened with Hurricane Helene is incredibly sad and tragic, and those people are going to have a very difficult time putting their lives back together. But the story of this hurricane is the hurricane, not the lack of a federal response. You know what I mean? Harris and Biden have been all over Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, Tennessee. They've been to all these different places. They're not supposed to be there in the 72 hours after the hurricane passes over because it's logistically difficult to have the executive, branch vice president and president in a disaster area. They're diverting resources away from the recovery effort. So if we're going to criticize George Bush for flying over New Orleans in the midst of the greatest failure of a federal disaster response in our history, that's very different from us not criticizing Joe Biden for being on the ground during, what is a tragic but so far a fairly routine federal disaster response.
No, I'm not saying that on the ground. He was in a plane, just like Bush.
No, but
he was also on the ground.
He was also on the ground, Jim.
Yeah, he was also on the ground.
Yeah.
But I really don't. It's just funny how they do things. And I don't know. It's just, I think, with elbows down to the poor people.
I gotta pause here, Julie. You too, ma'am. Always nice speaking with you. I gotta step away immediately because we have a scheduled interview coming up here. We're gonna speak to Rosalind Cook from the Political Science Department at Tulane. We're gonna talk a little bit about Mayor LaToya Cantrell and her quote unquote track record of delivering results. Okay, we'll get a look at Joe Cardosi with the traffic. Hopefully, I'll be back right after this. Just a real quick cap off that conversation I just had with Julie and Metairie about the $750 that Kamala Harris is getting banged on for saying she's going to have for Hurricane Helene victims. That is not the alpha and omega of the money that these people are going to get as they recover. That is for immediate costs that they're going to make those funds immediately available. The part that Fox News cut out says Kamala Harris, quote, FEMA is also providing tens of thousands of more dollars for folks to help them deal with home repair, cover a deductible when and if they have insurance, and also hotel costs. So as usual, there is a bigger story that doesn't totally get told, but we're going to pivot right now to more local politics. Joining me on the line right now is Rosalind Cook, who is an adjunct lecturer of political science in the political science department at Tulane University. Ms. Cook, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for being with us today. Reading now from thegambit.com, New Orleans' increasingly reclusive chief executive, LaToya Cantrell, made a rare public appearance, and she presented her administration's proposed 2025 budget to the city council. Despite the forward-looking nature of the event, Cantrell chose to look backward by treating herself to a rambling airing of grievances against her critics. "How I came in seems to be how I'm going out," she told the council. Accusation after accusation after accusation, but also a track record of delivering results. Professor Cantrell says she's delivering results during her tenure. What is your top line reaction to that? What accomplishments that Cantrell could point to stand out most to you, if any?
The population of New Orleans seems to be quite satisfied with the mayor during her first term with how she responded to the pandemic, how she responded to the hurricane. But after she got back in office, it seems things just changed completely.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think her attitude has changed. You know, as you said, she gets very, very defensive, and she's no longer in the mode of trying to convince people that she's doing a good job. She just says, they all taken it out on me. So it's really a turnabout in how she's acting, her political behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in addition to the sort of sea change in her behavior in the second term, there's also now these two federal investigations, a number of scandals. How much do you think these legal entanglements have impacted Cantrell's ability to govern effectively?
Of course, she can keep on governing. She's not going to step down, but it certainly it does affect how she can govern. I don't think she has the respect among most of the constituents any longer, and that affects how you govern. If your constituents don't respect you and don't have faith in you. And of course, with these federal investigations, obviously there is something to be investigated. They're not just carrying on a federal investigation without quite a bit of background knowledge of what she is doing, what she has been doing.
Yeah, in that regard, ma'am, do you think the city council had a bigger responsibility here? Should they have taken stronger action at some point in the middle of all these accusations and federal investigations? Is there more checks and balance that could be done here? Checking and balancing, I should say.
Well, the council can, of course, criticize her, but they can't grab the power away from us. They have taken some power back. For example, with her appointments now, they do pass it by the council, whereas before they didn't even have that control over it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of council people that certainly do speak out about her behavior and about the problems that they face with. So when you don't have a mayor that is working with the council, which actually happens quite often, there's arguments between the mayor and the council. But this is to another degree here, and it's not productive for the city.
Okay, ma'am, let's turn to crime for a moment here. The article touches on Cantrell's role in that federal consent decree that they have with the New Orleans Police Department. In your view, do you think her actions in this regard have helped or hindered progress?
Well, certainly, if crime has gone down, and the report showed that, but then there's questions about the statistics. Oftentimes, people think that statistics can be somewhat woven or shaped in such a way to give a much more positive outlook. And I think some people question that the statistics might be shaped in a certain way. Certainly, though, most individuals have a very positive approval rating of the police chief, and that would be one of Cantrell's stars that she put in, you know, bringing the police chief here. So that is certainly a very, very positive.
Ma'am, there's just 465 days left as Cantrell is entering her final months in office. The next mayor will be sworn in on January 12th, 2026. What do you think the state of play might be like for that person, whoever they are, once they step in as New Orleans' next mayor? What are going to be the top issues they'll be dealing with?
Well, they'll be dealing with the same issues that Cantrell is, and certainly some of those issues are to build the economy, to bring more jobs here, to keep crime under control, and to keep a good reputation for the city. You know,
yeah.
I think the stats are showing that tourism is pretty good, and people. But we also need, besides tourism, we need people to want to stay here, to want to go to school here, to want to bring up their children here, to live here in a city that they consider safe and productive. Of course, New Orleans has many, many pluses, as most of us who have lived here long time, you know, we don't want to give up the food. And certainly when
we visit
other places, we enjoy that. But you miss certain things about New Orleans, and you miss the people. The people are somewhat unique. The people do like to criticize. But I think they also have a tendency to praise people when they do a good job. And I think, really, Mayor Cantrell kind of messed up on this one when she didn't even have any real competition. I think it would be, you'd have to really look hard for a person who actually remembers the things of the candidates that ran against her in the last election. So she did not even have
That's right.
any competition. Now, of course, with the next mayor, he or she will have to face that we can no longer blame Cantrell once she's no longer in office. And another kind of interesting thought is, what is Mayor Cantrell going to do when she leaves office? You know, especially with this second term and the travel that she did, the Puntawa, these, even if you don't call them scandals, but these issues that make people raise their eyebrows. I mean, we all struggle hard to have an apartment or a house, and for someone, a mayor, to just decide that the Puntawa is hers to live in, to do, entertain whomever she wants, I think it really, really put a very unfavorable view of her. And the next mayor, I would think, out of the possible contenders, I don't think they would do anything close to that. But again, probably we didn't think Mayor Cantrell, looking back on her first term, I don't think there was anyone that predicted she would do the things that she has done during her second term.
Well, I guess we'll all find out at the same time here, man. We better stop there. Ms. Cook is an adjunct lecturer of political science in the political science department at Tulane University. Thanks for your time. You're working your way. Thank you, ma'am. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All
Thanks
right.
a lot.
Thank you so much. All right. When we come back, we'll get to more of your phone calls and text messages as we run you up to the 4 o'clock news. And after that, of course, is the Fans in the Pro with Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister. They're coming up next here on WWL. I'll be right back after this. Stick around. Coming up to the end of the show here on this really rainy Friday afternoon on the Okanagan Jewelers Talking Text Line. Here's a text that says, hey, I can answer what LaToya Cantrell is going to do when she leaves office. Due time. That's funny. Hey, here's a little game we can play. See if you can guess who said this. This is an excerpt from a statement that was given to The Guardian. This person says, now again, you got to guess who said this. Somebody very famous, somebody we all know, somebody we talk about on the show. They said this to The Guardian. It is imperative to guarantee that women have autonomy in deciding their preference of having children based on their convictions, free from any intervention or pressure from the government. Why should anyone other than the woman herself have the power to determine what she does with her own body? A woman's fundamental right of individual liberty to her own life grants her the authority to terminate her pregnancy if she wishes. Same person goes on to say, individual freedom is a fundamental principle that I safeguard. And without a doubt, there is no room for compromise when it comes to this essential right that all women possess from birth. Who said it? Who is this that said a woman's fundamental right of individual liberty to her own life grants her the authority to terminate her pregnancy if she wishes? Put another way, a woman's fundamental right of individual liberty grants her the right to have an abortion. Who said it? Melania Trump. Bet you didn't see that coming. Now, this is confusing a lot of people because this is not a moderate stance on abortion. This is to the left of Joe Biden. This is to the left of the Roe versus Wade compromise. What Melania Trump is saying here is a very leftist, liberal, progressive take on reproductive care. Why is she doing this now? Is it to moderate Donald Trump's stance and make people think that maybe he's going to be some sort of guardian for reproductive rights? Because he's trying to have it both ways. And, I don't know. We'll see it when it all comes out in the wash, if it really worked for him or not. Strange days. Let's go to Mike in Metairie on line two. Mike, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, man?
Great. I'm still proud of you with that 2020 vision. When you speak into the third grade right wingers like that lady, what was her name? Janice or Judy or something?
Yeah, her name's Julie. Let's not be mean to these people, Mike. I mean, we're all here to
I'm
do
not
it. All
mean.
Here to
I'm
do.
Just giving facts. I'm just giving facts. A
right.
2020 person against a third grader. That's an unfair fight. You shouldn't even do that. But anyway,
Just because they disagree, Mike, doesn't mean they're not smart people, and we'll just leave it at that, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Please continue.
That's why Trump said, "I love the uneducated."
I love the
that's
poorly educated.
Statement.
Yeah, I remember. All right, what's
yeah,
on your mind,
exactly.
Mike?
But anyway, as a federal lawyer, one of my fortes was strategy, and I have to condemn the Democrats for three or four times. They used ill-fated strategy. First of all, when the most popular president in history, this is how they did it. They took a poll on the last day of his presidency, and they compared him with other presidents. You know who that was? William Jefferson Clinton. And now his running mate, Al Gore, his vice president, strayed away from Bill Clinton, didn't talk about all of his accomplishments like the only man to have the budget balanced on multiple occasions. Nobody else did it once. And he never talked about any of that. He just wanted to do it on his own, ego. Same thing with Hillary. She didn't go back to the great Clinton economy during that time, saying she was a part of it, everything. I wrote her a letter to saying you have to invoke Bill Clinton. But they were so scared of the fact that he had some scandals with women. America had discounted that. That's what the poll said. And so now the only thing I have found wrong with the Democratic strategy now is I've been telling this Jewish friend of mine, this Jewish lawyer, you should have picked Josh Shapiro. This Jewish governor of Pennsylvania, the most important swing state. But they picked a guy, a nice guy, but not the sharpest tool in the tool shed.
Coach
Walsh. He got whipped bad. He got whipped badly against a lawyer. And
yeah,
Josh would have beat
well.
Him to death.
Yeah.
And so anyway, another mistake. Hopefully they can overcome it. But their strategies are so weak. And the only time when Bill Clinton, when James Carville, who's supposedly a genius, he said one thing, it's all about the economy, stupid. Everybody knows that. That's a basic third grade thing.
I remember.
But anyway, hopefully they don't make this doesn't kill them.
Yeah. We're in a strange place, Mike. I remember reading an article. Again, we're talking about Atlantic Magazine. I remember an article that I read right after Katrina when I picked up the first copy of that magazine I ever read said, Democrats can't win and Republicans can't govern. So there we are. We'll step away and get a look at traffic with Joe Cardosi, and I'll come back and wrap it up right here on WWL. Stick around. Okay, before we jump off, I want to make sure I thank my studio producer, Coleman, 5 stars, no notes, along with Endless Joe Cardosi on the traffic and Chris Miller in our news department. Crucial thanks to Scoot for his support, executive producer Jordan Fiegel, all hail Jordan, Lord of the Nasdor, and program director and brand manager Diane Newman, and market manager Dan Barron for the opportunity. This show and every show on WWL is available to hear, download, and share at WWL.com and the Odyssey app, where you can also rewind the show. You can follow WWL on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Hey, shout out to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, not to be mistaken with Beefline College or Chickenline Academy. Props to Christian Stokes from the Mortuary Haunted House. Hey, if I don't see you in the mortuary, maybe I'll catch you on set somewhere, my guy. To Tony Marino with the Louisiana Landmark Society and the New Orleans Nine. Thanks for keeping an eye on those endangered sites. Hey, might I suggest you add Port of Call cheeseburgers to the list of endangered sites? I'm heading over there tonight. I'm going to make a dent in those numbers. Huge ups to adjunct lecturer of political science in the political science department at Tulane University, Rosalind Cook. Next time I want to talk about political science, I'll be sure to call you at the political science department. Lots of love to Nikki Diamonds, D. Rose, Randy the Storyteller, and the inimitable JMD. Plus Brett, Kat, and Mr. Owen at Majoria's Commerce Restaurant. Keep those hash browns coming, guys. Godspeed to Matthew and everyone keeping the fight alive in Ukraine, and to the citizens of Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Gaza, and Iran, may cooler heads prevail. Hey, I got to split and head out and meet up with the National Weather Service. Marjorie Taylor Greene says they're controlling the weather now. I'm going to see if I can get him to turn off the rain this weekend so I don't have to bring a poncho to Fried Chicken Fest. Hey, thanks to everyone who called and texted during the show. If you love what you heard today, get a friend to listen too. Up next is the Fans and the Pro with Deuce and the Moose until 6 o'clock. But as for me, 5,000, G, we out of here. We out of here, G, 5,000. We out of here.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!